Okay, Numbers chapter 20 and verse number 1. Then came the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, into the desert of Zin in the first month, and the people abode in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. All right, so Miriam now, how old was Miriam compared to Moses? I remember. Older, younger?
13 years old.
How much older, John? 13
years.
I don't think so. She was older. I think Aaron, I could be wrong. I think Aaron was like 3 years older than him, and Miriam might have been 3 years older than him. But I could be wrong. But anyway, she was older. I didn't think to look that up. It wasn't important. But here she's lived all this time, so she would have been well into her 80s. Well, no, by this time, you know, pushing well over 100, because they've been wandering around for a long time. So she's an old woman, and she finally dies. You see, look down on a map here. I tried to print it out at halfway decent quality so that you can see some of these things. So we're talking about Kadesh. Right, so you look on your map here, you got the wiggle line that comes out of Egypt and goes over to Sinai, and then in some of these squiggles here, it goes up there, the arrow that goes up kind of in the middle. You'll see there at the end of the arrow, it says Kadesh Barnea. All right, so that's where we're at here, at Kadesh. So it was south of, just in the southern part of Israel there, at Kadesh. Right, and so that's where it was where Miriam died. Then after she died, we see in verse number 2, they face another problem. They need water again. And there was no water for the congregation. And they gathered themselves together against Moses and Aaron, of course. And the people chode with Moses and spake, saying, would God we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. You know, so who would have that been, when our brethren died before the Lord? Yeah, it could have been all those guys that were the making troubles, the Korah, Dathan, and the Abiram. It could have been any of those characters. But, I mean, lots of their other family had already died, too. There's heaps of them that had already died. But they just said, we wish we would have died already, you know, and we're going through all this torture here. We don't have water to drink. They're complaining and grumbling to Moses. And very foolish again. And we see here in verse number 4, and why have you brought us up the congregation of the Lord into the wilderness, this wilderness, that we and our cattle should die there? And wherefore have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us into this evil place? I know, years have gone by. These are all the kids that have grown up now. I mean, a lot of them are. Well, some of the gripers might have been still the old guys that hadn't died yet. But they're complaining. And so it's no place of seed or figs or vines or pomegranates, neither is there any water to drink. And Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and they fell on their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto them. You know, every time I read that of Moses and Aaron, it just reminds me, these men were men of God. As soon as they saw the problem coming, they knew what God was going to do. They knew God was going to be angry with these people, because God had been angry with them many times before, because they rebel against God. They're threatening God. They don't believe God. They don't trust God. And every time that happens, God's getting ready to disown them all. And Moses and Aaron, they fall on their faces before God and start praying, begging God for mercy. And so we see that's exactly what happens here. Then in verse number 7, the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take the rod, and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak, and I've highlighted that word here, speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, and it shall give forth water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock, so thou shalt give the congregation and their beasts drink. Now, as you read that, does any questions come to your mind? Why did God do what he did? Why did God, you know, that's the question that comes to mind. Why did God say, take your rod and then go talk to the rock? Why the rod? You know, the last time this happened, they dealt with this in Exodus chapter 17 in verse number 6. God said, take your rod and strike the rock and water will come out. And now God says, take your rod and talk to the rock. Don't hit it. And, you know, if God wouldn't have even mentioned the rod, maybe Aaron, Moses wouldn't have taken it with him and hit the rock. I don't know, but he says, take your rod. And that rod was the rod that they had done a lot of miracles with. I don't know that there was any miracle power in the rod, but they did. God did use that for opening the water of the Red Sea and lots of other things. But now they take the rod and they're supposed to talk to the rock. Well, he very well may have been. And Moses failed the test. All right, and it very well may have been that. Because as we read on down in, that, I guess I didn't really finish 8. Speak unto the rock and bring forth water, and you shall bring forth water out of the rock, and thou shalt give the congregation and their beasts. And Moses took the rod from before the Lord, as he commanded, and Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, hear and now, ye rebels, must we fetch water out of this rock? So Moses is angry with them. And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts also. Now, they got what they asked for. And God did do the miracle, even though Moses didn't do what he told him to. And, you know, sometimes people can ask God for things, and God may give it to them, even though it's not what God wanted. And that's an important thing for us to keep in mind. When we're praying, we need to make sure, you know, there in 1 John chapter 5, verses 14 and 15, it talks about praying in the will of God. And one of the first things we need to do before we come to the Lord with a major petition is to come to the Lord, first of all, to find His mind concerning that petition. I'm listening to an autobiography by George Mueller, who was a man of prayer and prayed and all that money for all his orphans and things back in the 1800s. And he often did that. He would pray before the Lord for weeks, sometimes a long time, saying, Lord, do you want us to start another orphanage? Do you want us to do this? Or do you want us to do that? And he'd pray and pray about, is this what you want, God? And show me something to help me to understand if that's really what you want. And then once God laid it upon his heart or showed him clearly, or sometimes he'd even pray and say, you know, if you want us to do that, Lord, start bringing in some money specifically designated to start another orphanage, if that's what you want us to do. And then all of a sudden he'd start getting money in, and somebody say, we're donating this to help you start a new orphanage. And, you know, so then he says, God wants me to do that. And then he starts praying, God, provide the money. I know you want us to have this orphanage now and help us. But see, first of all, he was seeking God's will. And here Moses, he got what he asked for. I mean, he hit the rock and the water came out. God could have said, you know, he could have hit that rock and nothing came out, and Moses would have looked like a fool, and all the people would have got angry with Moses. God could have done that. God didn't have to give water out of that rock by hitting it, because God didn't tell him to hit it. He told him to speak to it. But God did it anyway. And so we can't always be sure that just because God provides something or meets a need or answers a prayer, that it was actually what God really wanted to do. He did it, but it may not have been His plan. It may not have been His will. Yes, sir?
They say sometimes it's a sin of unbelief because you did not believe that by simply speaking into the rock that the water would come out.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
He said, we.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Moses doing it. It was God.
Yes, somehow Aaron was involved in it as well.
I think you're saying Moses said we are going to bring it, not God.
Is that
what you're saying?
Must
we
okay, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So we're sort of saying this isn't God doing it, it's me.
Okay, yeah, that's in verse 10 down to near the end. Must we fetch water out of this rock?
Yeah.
Okay, so yes, you're right there. It did imply that Moses and Aaron were fetching the water out. But also, as we work our way through this, Aaron gets blamed for it as well. Neither of them get to go into the promised land. And you know, it was Aaron, it was Moses that hit the rock. But Aaron must have had a part in it. You know, Aaron must have been fired up at the people too. Aaron must have been angry with them too. Aaron must have said, well, just hit that thing. You know, who knows what happened. But they both were involved. They both got blamed. All right? So, yes, sir.
I just wonder, normally, don't you think Aaron must stop do the talking work? Like, speak to the people, because Moses had a problem. You know, that's why he was using...
That was definitely true at the start. As you work your way through, I mean, I don't think that was a truthful thing that Moses complained about, because Moses seemed to be able to talk perfectly well. But he was using that as an excuse. As you work your way through, some of the time, especially when he was talking to Pharaoh, yes, he probably did use Aaron as his interpreter, sort of. But later on, we don't see him doing that. My guess is it wasn't really true. He probably could speak just fine. But nonetheless, both of them are to blame. I mean, they were supposed to talk to the rock, and Moses hit it. So, and then they both get blamed for it. So it is a good question as to exactly what took place here. But as you read on verse number 12, and the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, because ye believed me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. This is the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel strove with the Lord, and he was sanctified in them. All right, so both Aaron and Moses got blamed for hitting the rock, and neither of them could go into the promised land as a result. And so now, as they're preparing to go in, they're nearing the end here. Miriam's just died. Moses and Aaron are the only ones left in their family, of the older generation. And they were hoping to be able to go in, and yet they couldn't.
At the very least, Aaron didn't stop Moses doing it.
That's right. So,
instead of protest or, you know,
yeah, we don't really know exactly what impact he had, but he didn't get involved. And so that may be a good point you got there, Peter, because as you think about that, you know, many times we may be with somebody that's starting to do something that's not right, and if we keep our mouth shut and say nothing, we're partial in blame too. I mean, even the law says that. I mean, if somebody's in the car of a thief and they're robbing the bank, you know, and he's in the car with them, even though he doesn't do anything, he gets part of the blame as well. Because he's an accomplice to it. Yes, ma'am.
Do you believe this is a time of Christ as well? Because the rock was smitten and the water came out?
Yeah, could be.
So it's pretty important to God, the picture of what was happening.
Yeah, that's a real possibility. Yeah, there's a lot of types in the Old Testament, and some of them are clear types, and others are implied, but that is a possibility. Okay. As we move on to verse number 14, and Moses sent messengers from Kadesh unto the king of Edom. All right, now let's take a look at our map here. We won't read any more. We'll finish 14 in a second. So you look in the map here. They're up there at Kadesh, and they Edom, right off to the right of Kadesh. Look over there where the other arrow goes up in there. You'll see Edom. All right, see that? So the other arrow that goes up the right-hand side there. The first thing right under that point of the arrow says Edom. So they sent messengers over to Edom when they were at Kadesh. They said, we want to come through your land. So the land between Kadesh and that mark Edom there was the land of Edom. They said, we want to come through your land and pass through it. So they're sending these messengers. All right. So I finished verse 14. Thus saith thy brother Israel. All right. So how were they related? How was Israel and Edom related? To Esau. Okay, Edom was the descendants of Esau. And he says, he calls him brother, thy brother Israel. Thou knowest all the travail that hath befallen us. right, so all the troubles and problems they've had, how our fathers went down into Egypt, and we have dwelt in Egypt a long time, and the Egyptians vexed us and our fathers, and when we cried unto the Lord, he heard our voice and sent an angel and hath brought us forth out of Egypt. And behold, we are in Kadesh, a city in the uttermost of thy border. Right? So Kadesh apparently was on the far western border of Edom. Right? He says, let us pass, I pray thee, verse 17, through thy country. We will not pass through the fields, nor through the vineyards, neither will we drink the water of thy wells. We will go by the king's highway, and we will not turn to the right hand nor to the left until we have passed thy borders. All right, so they said, we're not going to bother you. We're not going to steal from you. We're going to go straight through. We're going to follow the main highway that goes through, and we're not going to steal from you. Now, this king's highway, I've got a note in your notes here. Different commentators make notes on this. It was a public road, according to Lang, and Jameson, Foss, and Brown commentary adds to that that it was a commercial. It was for commercial caravans as they traveled up through from Egypt and from down the south down up through that way. They would travel through that way. And Zodiates adds that it was a direct road. It was a direct road that went up that way. So this is the King's Highway. So this is the main, you know, we would think of like a bypass around a city.
It goes from the Gulf of Aqaba to Syria.
Yeah. So here's this bypass that goes through there. It's a major traveling area. Certainly wouldn't have been a four-lane highway, but you know what I mean. It was a major traveling area. And so Edom says in verse 18 unto him, thou shalt not pass by me, lest I come out against thee with the sword. And the children of Israel said unto him, we will go by the highway. And if I or my cattle drink thy water, then I will pay for it. And I will only, without doing anything else, go through on my feet. And he said, thou shalt not go through. And Edom came out against him with much people and with a strong hand. And Edom refused to give Israel passage through the border. Wherefore, Israel turned away from him. All right, so this is a heartbreaking time. They turned away, went down south again, and then they turned around and then they headed back up. So there was a range of mountains and things through there. So they probably went down there where they were used to and they passed over and then they came up the other side of the mountains, heading up on the eastern side there later on. So they're very discouraged now. It's a time of frustration, a time of heartbreak, really, because they could have just traveled right across there. It would have been short. It would have been easy on the King's Highway. And get on their way to where they're going to their destiny. Verse number 22, and the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, journeyed from Kadesh to Mount Hor. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in Mount Hor, by the coast of the land of Edom, saying, Aaron shall be gathered unto his people, for he shall not enter into the land which I have given unto the children of Israel, because ye rebelled against my word at the water of Meribah. So, Mount Hor, in your notes there, I put in there that the place, the site of Mount Hor is unknown, but it's assumed to be a little of the toward the east of Kadesh near Edom. So probably, you know, maybe where that word Amalek is written there, in that area.
Is that the same as Mount Hor?
No, it's a different place. This is Mount Hor.
Where do you say it is?
Well, probably about where the name Amalek is, just a little bit to the southeast of the of Kadesh, in that area, likely, but nobody knows for positive, but that's likely where it is. All right, so Aaron can't go in. He's rebelled against the Lord at the water of Meribah. And take Aaron and Eleazar, his son, and bring them up into Mount Hor, and strip Aaron of his garments and put them upon Eleazar his son, and Aaron shall be gathered unto his people and shall die there. And Moses did as the Lord commanded, and they went up into the Mount Hor in the sight of all the congregation, and Moses stripped Aaron of his garments and put them on Eleazar his son, and Aaron died there at the top of the mount, and Moses and Eleazar came down from the mount. You know, that would be such a... that's an unusual way to go. I mean, I guess there's pros and cons. I mean, he knew when they were going up the mountain, this is it. Goodbye, friends. I'm going to be with the Lord. And he was going to die. And they go up to the top, they takes his coat off and puts him on Eliezer, and Aaron lies down and dies. It's unusual. But you know, there's a lot of good things about that. You know, even like our elderly parents, when they get to that age when, you know, we know it's going to happen one of these days, they're going to die. You know, how are they going to die? Are they going to die slowly and painfully? Are they going to just drop over dead? You know, the people that just die of a heart attack suddenly, people say, oh, that's so tragic. Well, yeah, it is kind of tragic, but it's a whole lot better than suffering. And, you know, some people really go through agony. But Aaron here, no pain as far as we know. He was fine. He walked up to the top of the mountain, takes his coat off and dies. And then we see in verse 29, and when all the congregation saw that Aaron was dead, they mourned for Aaron 30 days, even all the house of Israel. So they mourned for him as he died there. So,
do you think that Aaron was about the same age as Moses?
He was a little bit older than Moses.
Moses was 120 when he died, so.
Yes. So Aaron was probably 123. So right around there. So he's been around for a while. Just a couple of thoughts here for the principles for us today. You know, death is one of those unavoidable appointments that every human will eventually face if the Lord does not return first. You know, we don't like thinking about death. We don't like talking about death. When it happens and someone dies, you avoid talking about it because it's unpleasant. Those who have lost a loved one hurt. So it's not the kind of thing that is very commonly talked about, because who wants to talk about it before it happens? And once it happens, you don't want to talk about it either. So we just don't talk about it. But it is one of those realities that we can't escape. And even the most godly people may do wrong things. Right? They too suffer the consequences. And we must let this be a warning to us, not an excuse. All right? A warning that even as Moses and Aaron, they were going fine for all those years. They've led the people. They've done well. They pray. They bow. You know, they beg God for help. God has blessed them and helped them. And then they make one wrong move, and God says, "That's it." You know, you wonder why did God just cut them off at once? I mean, why didn't God give them any options? But yeah, they were under the law, and they were responsible, and they knew the power of God, and they knew the blessing of God. They knew how God had met needs over and over and over again. So why they didn't listen to God that time, and they just got upset and angry and rebelled, who knows? But they paid the consequences for it. So it's a good reminder to us, certainly not an excuse for us to say, well, even good people sin, so it's no problem if I sin. No, look at the consequences. Even the good people suffer the consequences too. Very severe consequences in their case. And then we see that God can use disappointments to redirect our paths, to fulfill his will in our lives. You know, things that can change, even like the Edomites here wouldn't let them go in, and God redirected them, and it actually was what God wanted for the people, even though it was not pleasant for them. And then life and death are in the hands of God. And are not left to fate. Aaron died when God ordered it, and so will you and me. All right? So we're going to die when it's God's time. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to figure out. You know, just I mentioned, I think it was last week or so, that the preacher friend of mine, that he had to have a funeral for an 8-week-old baby. And you say, why? Why would God allow that? Those are questions nobody has an answer for, but God knows what he's doing. And whether they're 8 weeks old or 80 years old, you know, God's got a time, and he's got a plan.
We so might not die if the rapture comes early for us.
Amen. That'd be good. Hopefully tonight.
No death.
It'd be great if it was tonight.
As you get older and older, you can't listen to this life.
All righty. Any questions? You've had good input on it tonight. I appreciate that. That always makes it enjoyable to teach when you have good input.
Yes, I think, a long time ago, when we went through the prophets, I think we also went through that Moses was the the greatest and the biggest prophet.
Yes, he was definitely the he was definitely the, what's that?
The greatest prophet was John the Baptist, even Christ mentioned.
Yeah, well, Christ did mention that. But he, of the Old Testament, the Jews looked at Moses as their prophetic hero. There's no question about that.
But the Lord said, no greater prophet is.
Yeah, but the reason for John the Baptist getting that kind of accolade from Christ was because of what he was doing. He was announcing the arrival of the Messiah.
Yeah, nevertheless.
So, yes. But as far as the prophetic things and the things that he did, John the Baptist didn't do nearly what Moses did, as far as all the ministry that Moses had. But as far as what Christ said, you're right, Joe. Absolutely, you're right.